It's the most all-star studded challenge ever. And this time, it's every competitor for themselves.
Best challenge ever!
The Challenge All-Stars. New season now streaming on Paramount Plus. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.
Hey, Keely.
Hey, Chris.
Welcome to Heard It on the Sidelines.
Heard it
on the sideline with Shotgun Spratling.
Welcome back to the Heard It on the Sidelines podcast for a special Sweet 16 edition. That's right, two Heard It on the Sidelines podcasts this week with a basketball team somewhere they haven't been in 14 years. That's the Sweet 16 for you guys that aren't really good at math. I'm your host, Shotgun Spratling, double dipping into the March Madness Heard It on the Sidelines waters with a special show and a special guest today. First, thanks again to Keely and Chris for the intro and to all of you for joining us. For any newcomers out there, the Heard It on the Sidelines podcast is a part of the Peristyle podcast family. On this podcast, we discuss what's going on at USC, but also try to pull back the curtain a little bit to give you an insider's perspective from the people around the Trojans athletic programs. Today on our episode, we've got USC Hoops great Sam Clancy joining us. Clancy is one of four men's players, well, three men and one dynamic 19-year-old seven-footer, to wear the Cardinal Gold that have been named to the Conference Player of the Year, have won that award. So since this is the second Heard It episode this week, we're just going to jump right in with the All-American. Sam Clancy, former USC Trojan forward, the Pac-12 Player of the Year in 2002, two-time All-Pac-12 first team. Sam, thanks so much for taking the time to jump on and join us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
It's been fantastic kind of seeing this team and how they've grown. And you said you've watched this team. So I'm curious to know what your kind of thoughts are on watching what this team was able to do in that first weekend, opening up against Drake and then putting it on Kansas on Monday night and putting a 34-foot whooping on the Jayhawks. What have you kind of thought of watching this team over the season?
I actually followed the team closely from the beginning. So I was able to see them grow throughout the season. And it's just amazing to see Evan Mobley right now. He's grew into, you know, the beast that he is now. He was always there, but, you know, in the beginning of the year, he wasn't really taking over the games like that. And now you see that he's taking over the games when needed, but also the defensive presence that, you know, that is there. But also you can see that the team is just so much comfortable playing with him now. Last night, guys are making shots. You can see that with the way we're moving the ball, the confidence we're playing with. And it all really comes down from the defense. So when you have the best defensive team and the best defensive player in the tournament and arguably, you know, by far the best player in the whole tournament, I think that the sky's the limit. You know, it just shows that, you know, in the tournament time, when the lights are the brightest, you know, who really shows up to play and anything can happen.
You know, you said you've watched this team throughout the season and seen how they've kind of progressed. Is it surprising to you at all to see, you know, how they performed, particularly in that Kansas game? And, you know, I felt like it was the first time where they really put, a full 40 minutes together on the defensive side and probably about 36 minutes on the offensive side. They did start a little slow, but pretty much a complete game for them. It was their most thorough game, I think, all season and perhaps in the last decade or so. Was it surprising to you at all to see them and how well they played this opening weekend?
Honestly, it was not surprising to me because I know that what they did, they didn't do anything different than what they have done all year. Basically, they hung their hat on their defense. I don't know, Kansas scored but 51 points or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, they had to score was 55 to win the game or 52 points, you know? So when you're playing defense like that, you know, and that USC, they were one of the top defensive teams in the league all year. They just were missing the three-point shot. And it was only a matter of time before the shots fall, and they fell last game, and you see the blowout. But it didn't surprise me because even in the Drake game, if they would have came out and started slow in that game, you know, and really struggled in that game, then that would have surprised me. But the tournament is all about momentum. So you see these teams who go in, they win one game, and then boom, it's on, you know. The same thing with us. We won one game, and then the confidence through the roof, and you're off, and you're rolling. You know, so that's what happens in the tournament, and it's all about momentum. And once I seen how they came out in a Drake game and they played, you know, really good the whole game, I was like, oh, yeah, they're ready. So it didn't surprise me at all that what happened in the Kansas game. There's a lot of reminiscent of, you know, kind of our run, you know. Mm-hmm. A lot of similarities, the same seed and everything, you know, kind of being like underdog team. The Pac-12, even at that time, we had four teams from the we were the Pac-10, but four teams in the Pac-10. We were in the Sweet 16 at that time too. So it's a lot of similarities.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if you noticed those similarities, but one of the ones that I noticed in listening to you guys, you had recently had a rewatch with three of your teammates watching that Kentucky game, your Sweet 16 game. You guys talked about your defense, and you had this matchup zone defense that someone on the rewatch said that Brian Scalabrine kind of designed at practice one day. And USC zone defense, something they haven't used a ton of this year, but has been super effective these first two games of the NCAA tournament. And they just seem to be flying around all over the place. And that's something you guys kind of mentioned in that rewatch. Have you noticed the way the defense and the intensity has kind of grown, I guess, in this moment of being in the NCAA tournament?
I have. And I've seen quite a few games earlier in the season. They would play zone here and there, and they would struggle with it, and they would have to come out early because teams would just make a few threes and then boom, you're out the zone, you know, and they weren't as active. And now I see that they kind of put zone on a little bit with Drake and everything. But the second half, they really stepped up their defense in the zone. And the zone just really makes you active. And a lot of players think like, oh, okay, we're in the zone, I can relax now. But on contrary, you got to be more active because you don't have a man there, you don't have a body. So it's a lot of things with our zone, too. And we were struggling with our zone throughout the year because you don't have matchups. You know, you don't have a particular man you're trying to figure out. And Scalabrine, one day, I remember he was just saying, like, you know what? Someone just guard someone. You know what? Just make sure you have a man, you're accountable in your area. And we were athletic enough, similar to the team now, where anyone can guard anyone on the court. So as long as you had a man, we just wanted to keep the guards on the outside and the bigs on the inside. That's similar to what they do with Evan. You know, he just in there protects the paint. Anyone comes in there, he's just long. He doesn't even have to block the shot. He's already, you can't finish over him. You know, he changes up so many shots. So, and he can also move on the perimeter too. But that was a key to our success, was that, you know, we really figured out our defense. And it was in the right time. And we were communicating and we were really flying around. And going back watching the Kentucky film, like, we made so many mistakes in our zone. And we didn't even know what defense we were in half the time. But being active and, you know, really wanting to win the game, like, we can cover for each other. So it all worked out.
Yeah, I'm curious about your that group from the 2001 team. How much chatter has there been, you know, group text or anything like that about this? You know, it's the 20-year anniversary of that run and the run this current group is on, making it to the first Sweet 16 since 2007. How much in the last day or two or weekend have you guys kind of been chattering with each other about what this team is doing?
You know what? We really are a special group because I actually keep in contact with a lot of guys from the team, and we've been keeping in contact ever since then. So when now, you know, maybe we're getting a little more airtime. It's 20-year anniversary. But for us, you know, I think that we feel like it's about time. You know, we had some good teams over the years. I didn't think it would be 20 years for us to get back to, I don't know, Sweet 16 or whatever. But for me, I feel like it's about time, and it's good to be back on the national stage and getting the publicity, but we can't really brag yet. I feel like we got to win the next game and then we can really have some bragging rights, but I feel like we can get to the Final Four. I've been saying all year long, man, I've been saying, telling my people back home, back East Coast, I'm a Cleveland boy, like, hey, watch Evan Mobley. We got USC. We got a team, one of the tallest teams in the nation. We really can play, you know, we're going to do some damage. You know, no one was really listening to me. Everybody was disrespecting me as usual, but I will, you know, everyone's listening now and taking notice now. So, you know.
Yeah, especially when you beat down a Blue Bud by 34 points, you know, it was just a remarkable performance. Talking to Drew Peterson earlier, I asked him, I said, was there ever a point you kind of looked up the scoreboard and said, wow, we're up by that much? You know, is there a time that you can remember during your guys' tournament run that, you know, where you looked up the scoreboard and were like, wow, we're up that much? Or was it just head down and focused the entire time?
Honestly, it was just come out and focus. And the way we played back then, we were a pressing team. So we would come out, just jump on you, press, and get steals and, you know, try to, you know, speed the game up that way and with our, you know, and with our defense. So honestly, like, playing in those arenas, we weren't familiar with the, you know, NBA arenas. Mm-hmm. And the scoreboard, it's a, you know, they got the big jumbotron is right above you and you got to look all the way up. So I didn't even know the score half the time. I'm trying to find the score. I'm like, oh my God, you know, but this is like at the end of the game. So really at that point, you're just so much focus into the game. I remember watching the rewatch, and that was the first time I seen the game. I never seen the Kentucky game since I played. It was the first time watching the, wow, the rewatch. And we were up 20, and I was like, oh my God, we were up 20? I didn't even know that. So, you know, I didn't even know. You know, even to this day, all I know is we won, you know, and that's all that really mattered to me is, you know, we won. And, you know, because in tournament, it doesn't matter because we were up 20, and in 1 minute, they can come back. And so it doesn't matter. You can't like rest and be like, oh, I'm up 20 now because you're going to be in a 1-point game in a minute, you know? So you really got to focus for the whole 40 minutes.
One of the things that is interesting about the NCAA tournament and just kind of how it's set up is that you play on a Thursday or Friday normally. You have a day off. You play again if you make it to the second round. But then you have a full week off before the Sweet 16. And you guys played in New York City, and then you went to Philadelphia for the Sweet 16 and Elite Eight. This team, obviously, they're staying in the quote-unquote controlled environment in Indianapolis, so they're staying where they are. They've been in a hotel for a couple weeks now. And I don't think they're complaining too much about, you know, having to stay in the hotel with what it means right now. But you guys have a little bit more freedom roaming around the city. What do you remember about that week between the opening weekend and then the weekend of the Sweet 16 Elite Eight?
For us, honestly, we had a lot of drama behind the scenes. It all started with, I don't know who makes the tournament and arrangement. You know, we're all kids, so we're just going along for the ride. Mm-hmm. They put us we got the Philadelphia. They put us Embassy Suites. But before that, we played at the Meadowlands. And I remember my first time in New York, we were walking around, you know, because we got the week off. So we got to walk around, and I had kind of strained my groin a little bit. And Coach Bibby, he was just like, Sam, you just play in the game. So I was really resting, just playing in the game. Actually, you know, he wouldn't even let me practice that whole week. He wouldn't let me practice. But I remember walking around New York. We had all our after we had beat Boston College. We were going to this Sweet 16 and playing Kentucky, and we're walking around with our got the Fox Sports cameras following us, walking around with our USC sweatsuits on and everything, and everybody in New York is just killing us. You know, we're walking by the garden and they're like, oh, SC, you're going to get Tito, Tayshaun Prince, Kentucky, they're going to kill y'all. Y'all terrible. Go back to Cali, y'all soft, LA. Everybody in the subway, everything. It's my first time in New York. So I'm like, oh, wow, everybody knows this. Everybody's just killing us too. And we're like, man, all right, okay. All right, I see how they feel about us out here, you know? And on top of that, you know, we get there. So we stayed at the Embassy Suites, and the elevator broke, so there was no elevator, so we were late to practice, and there was a lot of drama with that. We had to change hotels and stuff, and they finally changed us and moved us to like the Four Seasons stuff. But at that time, we weren't living so luxurious, you know. We were taking one elevator in the Embassy Suites and tournament and everything. But the biggest disrespect of all come from I remember in the tournament. So everyone was wearing the Vince Carter Shocks at that time. Mm-hmm. And we wanted them. And, you know, we were in Nike school, and we were like, Coach, we want the Shocks. You know, we're in the tournament, you know. And the coach called Nike, and they were like, no, you can't get the Shocks unless you make the Sweet 16. Because they didn't think we were going to make the Sweet 16, you know. So they're like, we don't got to worry about giving them the Shocks because they're not going to make the Sweet 16, that's for sure. You know? So when you watch the Kentucky game, we've got our new shoes on, the Shocks. We're like, a young AAU team came out there with our new gear on. Completely disrespected in New York, completely disrespected by Nike. So we had a huge chip on our shoulder. So this is what we were dealing with, like, coming up into the game. So it was only rightfully for us to go out there and, you know, put a whooping on Kentucky that we did. You know, just the way that they were disrespecting us behind the scenes.
So from that, Isaiah Mobley, after the game, said that, you know, facing Oregon is he didn't want to say that they got lucky, but he said they stole the Pac-12 championship. So obviously that's going to be some bulletin board material. Now I think USC has obviously got the chip on their shoulder from, you know, not having the most wins in the Pac-12, but not winning the Pac-12 regular season title. Oregon's now going to have a chip on their shoulder from these comments, but also from, you know, the fact that USC, you know, handled them the first time that they met. How does that momentum work? You know, when you're in this week where there's a lot of downtime as well, how does that momentum carry over into a game that's going to be next Sunday?
Well, for us, it's completely different because there was no social media. So we didn't have to deal with, like, what you guys are saying on the podcast, what the fans are saying, what everyone's saying about us. So there's none of that. It was just completely in our room playing the games, and we didn't even know what the outside world was thinking. We only could know about the game, you know? So it was completely different. I can only imagine what these guys have to go through now in the bubble and reading everything on social media. But as far as me, it's bulletin board material. That's all it is. That's just for fans to talk about, for the hype your team up, rah, rah, rah. But if you're not ready at this point in the season and you got to get excited about what Evan Mobley or what Oregon said, then you know what? You don't belong on this stage. So that's how I look at it, really. I think both teams don't need any extra motivation. If you're playing for the Elite Eight, I know how they felt, because when we played against Kentucky, if UCLA was playing against Duke, and if we were like rooting for UCLA, I was like the biggest UCLA fan in the world at that time, because we would have played UCLA instead of Duke in the Elite Eight, you know? So I understand. But the rivalry is good. I think it's going to make for a great game. I'm looking for us to go in there and continue dominating like we have been. But Oregon is not going to be easy. You know, I don't think we can rest and be like, oh, we beat Kansas by 30 points. Because Kansas, honestly, they were shorthanded. Mm-hmm. They were dealing with a lot of COVID stuff. So you can't really look at that like that's, you know, a strong Kansas team. You know, it's not. So you got to just take that and just, okay, we won that game. Now we're on to the next. Only focus. But I don't think about the bulletin board stuff. I don't think Evan needs any more motivation. But I just want to see him be a player that, because you don't know what type of player he is. Some players can talk trash and that motivates them, or other players, they hear this stuff and it kind of puts them in a shell. So I hope that brings out the dog in him, the beast that he's been showing all year, and that he continues dominating and performing like he has been.
One of the things with the bulletin board material is that now it's now in the current era, it's more message board material for the fans to go on rather than the players, especially like you talked about. It's a chance to go to the Elite Eight. I don't think you need anything else to motivate you there. But the time leading up to it, they've now got, I think, 5 or 6 days to lead up to the game. What was the toughest part about the downtime? You know, you guys traveled from New York City to Philadelphia, even though that's not a very long jaunt there. But, you know, dealing with the hotels, you got some other stuff going on. But as far as just the downtime with, you know, having a practice a day, how do you kind of deal with that when a lot of college athletes aren't used to being away for a full week like they are right now?
Honestly, like Coach Bibby, he kept us on a tight chain. Like we couldn't – like I said, I didn't practice all week. Coach Bibby is more of an NBA coach anyway, so we weren't really practicing. We got to that point. We already did all the practicing. You know, if you got to practice at this point, you know what you know. Come ready to play. He was like that. You know, like, you got any little injuries, tweak, you're good. Just come ready to play. But I remember the trainer had to give us sleeping pills. And it was the first time, because it's very difficult to sleep, and you're just going to stay up all night, like, thinking about the game, and you can't really sleep. And you know, I just remember sitting in the room, just really watching this CBS. All you could watch is this TV, and just really being bored. We couldn't do much, and just sit around the hotel. And that's the best thing for the guys to do, is just really sit around the hotel and just try to wait for the game to come and focus on that. But I can only imagine what they're going through, because I don't know if they're on complete lockdown. They can't really go out like a normal, you know, like a normal life. They're in like a bubble type situation. So it's much more difficult than what we were going to. You know, we could still go out, you know, at least go for a walk and everything. But we were on lockdown. We couldn't do anything. So it was just, like, really your life is just hotel, meals, film, practice, you know, sleep, and then repeat. You know, we couldn't do nothing else. We weren't hanging out. So that's all we could do.
Did you guys get a little bit of reprieve from the classwork at all from your professors during that time?
Yeah, the funny thing was, you know, like you said, we were in the East Coast region, so we were in New York first. We went to Philly, so we were gone for 2 weeks, and this was like right before 9/11. So old, my goodness. So this is right before 9/11, because it was in March. So when we came back to L.A., when we arrived back, there was like, we didn't know. It wasn't social media, so we didn't know what we had did. We didn't know, like, that L.A. was going crazy about us. We didn't know anything, you know? So we come back off the airplane, and we were taking commercial flights, you know? We would come off the airplane, you know, like in the morning, like grug, and then we could wait to come out to like 1,000 people just waiting for us at the tarmac, you know, you can come actually to the gate at this time. So there was like so many fans waiting for us. And so that was like one of the biggest memories, like, whoa, like oh my goodness, like, what do we what do we really do? So we didn't really know what we did until we got back to LA, till everything finished, you know. But yeah, when we were there, it was just all about like just focusing on hair. But I mean, honestly, it was one of the best basketball times in my life, and just a great accomplishment because everyone has to come together. Like when you're in a tournament, like if you watch it in the games, like guys who haven't made a shot all year, like hitting shots, and you know, everyone's like, we were making behind the back pass alley oops, the dunks and stuff. Like, what's going on here? We're like the Globetrotters, we're like the best team all of a sudden. You know, all of a sudden everything is clicking. This play hasn't worked all year. Now we're getting dunks off. So in a tournament, it's like kind of, it is magical because stuff like that happens and it clicks. And then at the same time, fast forward to the next year, when everything goes bad, it goes terribly wrong, you know? So it works. It works in both ways. That's just the tournament, how it works. And that's why it makes for exciting basketball. And this year, it's like wide open. So I think this is the year for a mid-major to come in there, or why not USC to come in there and take a national championship? If not us, then who, you know? Come on.
It'll be interesting to see if they can get past Oregon. The next team could be Gonzaga there, and that's a team that has been undefeated all season. Can USC potentially or Oregon be the team to stop their run at that undefeated title? You as a post player, what have been your general impressions of watching the Mobley brothers? You talked about how players step up and guys that haven't been making shots suddenly make one. Isaiah Mobley, in the regular season, he was 7, I think, of 24 on three-pointers. He was 9 of 10 to start on three-pointers in the Pac-12 tournament and the first two games so far before missing one in the second half. So he's 9 of 11 on three-pointers in the postseason. How difficult of a matchup do those two guys present, especially if Isaiah knocks down a couple threes like he's been doing recently?
I think I've been saying all year long that Isaiah Mobley, he was really the X factor for the team. You know, a lot of the Evan gets all the headlines as well as he should, you know, but Isaiah really, like, and for me, it all came down to when he could slow down. Cause I seen him early in the season, he would kind of rush in his moves and he wasn't kind of sure of himself. You know, as a young player, you got to have to get sure of yourself, sure of your role. You have to get confident. You have to go through a lot of stuff to be able to perform, you know, and consistently every day, every game. That's the hardest part as a young player. So I seen him go through this maturity process. And he got the great form. And as far as a basketball player, it's all about confidence. Like, even as me, once I realized that I had the confidence, then I was like, I thought that I was better than these players, and I could play better. Even if I really wasn't, I thought that I was, and I played better. You know, I see that his confidence now is he's like, oh, I made him his first shot. And when I seen him make his first shot, I was like, oh, yeah, here we go. This is all we need for him to make that first shot, because as a basketball player, once you make that first shot, the basket's huge. You just feel so much differently than if you brick it off the side of the rim the first time, you know. It's just a big mental thing, especially if you're not, you know. So for him to play well, it was big for us. And also, that's the beauty of the tournament. It doesn't matter anything you do before now. You know, so it doesn't matter. Oregon State, who cares what they did earlier? No one. Nobody. Oh, they lost in, December. Nobody cares about that. It only matters what you do now. And how you're playing at the end of the season. If you didn't make a shot all year, no one cares. It only matters if you made that last one, if you made that big one for us now. So, I mean, I just see that I really feel happy for him, because I feel like he's increasing his stock, because you're on the big stage. You have to play big on the big stage. And if he continues to make these shots and the way Evan's playing, the way they play defensively, I don't think anyone can stop him. And he doesn't even have to make the shot. He just has to make them think that he's going to make it. And then he can drive past them because he's so versatile. You understand? So he doesn't even got to make it. He just got to make them honor it, the other big guys, because the other big guys are too slow-footed. They can't – where there's a huge matchup problem everywhere. But not only the Mobley brothers, I want to give some respect to – I love Goodwin coming off the bench. He just brings so much energy. So for me, this is a great mix of the Mobley brothers with the skill – and then energy guys with Isaiah White and Goodwin coming off the bench. This is a great matchup. So, you know, and also we're just so long. So I really love that, how the team is put together. You know, I think we're going to be a tough out, you know.
Yeah, I've talked about this. I had Chris Capco on earlier in the season. I gave him some love for the way that the coaches have put together the roster, just because it just seems like all the pieces can fit together. And we've actually seen that happen in the last couple of weeks, it feels like, you know, especially in this run. And the one thing to note from what you said was the confidence factor. And Isaiah Mobley just said a couple of days ago, he said, when this team plays, when we all play with confidence, he doesn't think they can be beat. And you saw it, I think, yesterday, not only Isaiah Mobley, which I think he's playing with a ton of confidence right now, just like you said, but Ethan Anderson. You see the turnaround jumper in the middle of the lane. You see an Isaiah White knock down three threes when, you know, he usually only shoots one or two per game. It just seems like everyone knows their role right now. And maybe it took a little while. It took a little extra time. We talked about that with Drew Peterson, just taking a little extra time with the COVID and everything this season and putting this roster together. But seems like everything is going in the right direction. Everyone seems to know what they're doing, and they're playing with confidence at the exact right time of the season.
Well, here's the difference in playing in a tournament and playing in the regular season. It's like, if you play in the regular season, you have another game. Like, they play Thursday, they got another game on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to go 120% on Thursday. I mean, it's just human nature. You want to, but it's not going to happen. You understand? They're playing right now do or die basketball. You understand? So they're playing for their life. If they know if they lose, both teams are. So they know if they lose, they're going home. There is no tomorrow. So that's why the tournament is the best, you know, basketball that we have, because it's one game, do or die. There is no tomorrow. So you see teams go all out in every possession. So that's what you see for SC. They're not even thinking about, whereas before the coach might be like, don't shoot that shot. You just missed two of them. Now they're out there pulling it because, like, I got to make it because I'm going home, you know? And they're shooting with more confidence than they would be In the regular season, if you understand what I'm saying, because now it's like pressure goes both ways, you know, either bust pipes or it makes diamonds, you know what I'm saying? So you got to, right now they're showing that what they're made of, and the other guys are stepping up. And the same thing happened for us too. Like, Robert Hutchins came big free throws, Jarvis Turner were coming big plays off the bench. And it seemed like everybody, Desmond Farmer come up with energy. It seemed like everybody who came in, ready to play, knowing their role, and they played above than how they were playing in the regular season. And that's all what you need if you want to go on one of these Cinderella runs in the tournament.
Is it strange where you mentioned Desmond Farmer? Is it strange seeing him on the bench as a graduate assistant?
No, that's my guy. That's my guy, D-Farm. So what would it be strange? Like, I would see these guys over in, like, Argentina, for example, or I was over in different countries and see, like, Jeff and friends. So it's crazy when you grow with these guys and you see them in a different country. So, but no, I'm very happy for Desmond, and I know that he's bringing a lot of value to the team and everything. And I know that he's trying to start his coaching journey, and I know he's been really helpful for the young guys. I've been keeping contact with him pretty much throughout this year and everything. So he's been keeping me inside tabs on the team and everything. And I know he's been helpful with a lot of the young guys, because Desmond, he was a heck of a player, and he's got a lot of insight to give back to the guys.
Yeah, we had a really fun chat with him. If anyone's listening, you can put that in the queue as the next thing to listen after this podcast ends. The last week's Heard It on the Sidelines podcast. It was terrific insight from him. Talking about his journey in basketball and traveling, coming from Michigan to USC, and then, you know, playing in the NBA a little bit, going overseas. You had similar, you know, you came from the Midwest. You came to USC from Ohio. And I had to ask him, you know, what sold you on coming to USC from being a Midwest guy coming from Ohio? What was it about USC that you wanted to be a Trojan?
Honestly, I just really loved the coaching staff at the time, Coach Bibby and Coach Miller, Sylvie Dominguez, how they sold the program to me. I knew that USC wasn't like a heavily known basketball school, but that didn't really matter to me. I knew that if I played well, like I would get my, you know, I would get my due and my respect wherever I was at. So I didn't really worry about going to, like, a, you know, a big basketball school. It caused a lot of problems with me, honestly, because I signed early. So I had a lot of problems signing early to USC. I remember being investigated by the NCAA for $25,000 before I signed, you know, because I signed early, and they were like, hey, who's this All-American kid signing early to USC? Like, early, wait, they had to pay him money, you know? But I was like, no, I didn't get paid any money. I just really came for the program. And honestly, I'm from Cleveland, Ohio, and I was just done with the the brutal winters and coming out to LA for the first time. I'm like, you know, this is the place for me. I got to come out here and see how they're living out here. But also the situation has worked for me. At the time I came in, we had a lot of bigs, but Coach Bibby, he promised me, he's like, hey, if you work hard, you got a spot to play, you know? And at the time we had like one of the top five recruiting class, the nation, something like that, top 10, something like that. So I was like, you know, I'm all aboard. And I only took one visit, honestly, that's what caused a lot of problems. And I came here and I was away on campus and I'm like, you know, I just fell in love first day. I'm like, Kelly, that's where I need to be. I can't do Cleveland too much. You know, I come back to visit. I'll come back in June, July, but I can't do, you know, December and stuff. I can't do that.
Yeah.
So, but everything worked out. You know, everything worked out great. I have no regret. I mean, everything worked out better than I could have ever anticipated, honestly.
You were drafted by the 76ers. Unfortunately, an injury, you know, cut things short there, signed with the Trailblazers, never played an NBA game. How big of a, you know, is a disappointment or a regret is it that that happened? I know you played in a bunch of other places, but just to be able to play in one NBA game, what would that have meant for you?
Honestly, like, I never had, like, it wasn't for me NBA or bust, you know? Okay. It was always, like, it was just more like, Coach Dominguez, I'll never forget what he said, you know? Shout out to Coach Dominguez. He's a defensive genius, and Sylvie Dominguez. And he was like, you know what? Worry about now. Worry about being the best player you could be now. Don't worry about being, like, how you're going to be in the NBA if you get there, or how you're going to – worry about being the best college player you could be. You know, so that's all I really used to worry about was, like, you know what? I'm worried about being the best I can be here. If the NBA work out for me, that work out. But if it don't, it wasn't in the cards. So I don't really have any regrets. It didn't work out. Yeah, I would love to play in a game and everything. But also, I feel like that is more for the fans and my family to be like, yeah, I know what I am. I know Sam Clancy. He played in the NBA game. You know what? As opposed to me, I played, you know, this is like my first March Madness that I didn't play basketball. You understand? So you're talking about 20-year anniversary. This is my first year that I haven't played basketball since. So for me, I had a great career. It doesn't matter NBA or any, you know, so I don't really look at it like that. You know, I had a great career, a great long career. I traveled the world. I seen things I never would have saw, mm-hmm. You know, had I wish I didn't get hurt, of course. But I'm not going to look, I never look back in hindsight. You know, I always try to look forward and try to make the most of the situation and everything. So that's how I always looked at it. You know, I think that was kept me going, because I think if I always was looking back, like, man, if I could be like this, I would have never had the long career mm-hmm. to play till 39 years old that I would have had, because I would always be thinking about, oh man, back in 2002, I got hurt and I was killing everybody and I should be doing this and I should be doing that and look at these guys here. And I'm, you know, like, I can't think like that, you know? So I have to, like, you know what? This is for me. This is what, it didn't work out. We're here now and I'm focused on this because, I had a great career overseas and I wouldn't change anything.
Yeah, you played in a number of different countries. You ended up staying in Argentina for most of the last decade. What was it about Argentina that kept you going back down there?
Honestly, I played. I didn't even know. And that's the thing. I never even knew this stuff until recently. I ended up playing in like 10 countries on 4 different continents, something like that. I didn't even know this stuff until someone was telling me like recently. Now I'm doing it, like, these interviews, people are telling me. I'm like, oh, I didn't even know that. Like, oh, my goodness. Wow. No, what happened was a lot of economic things happened, mm-hmm. for example. So, like, you know, we're playing basketball like that. You're basically, a hired contract. You're like a hired assassin. You just go and get buckets wherever they hire you at, you know, basically. So Europe, they had a recession. And then South America, everything was rolling down there. But also going down there, the people kind of revitalized my, I'm going to say my love for basketball, because when you're traveling like that, it becomes a lot of a business and you don't really, you know, it becomes more of a business than a love for the game and everything. But South America, they really gave me back a love for the game and, you know, they kept giving me contracts and kept signing me, wanting me back. So I was happy to be back, but I mean, I'm not going to lie. I love Argentina. Shout out to all my Argentinian people. I love it down there, and I finished a great career down there.
fan favorite down there. Unfortunately, last year with the COVID, everything kind of got shut down. I'm curious, and I asked this about Desmond, and he talked about the economic portion. He said that I asked him, what's the biggest life lesson you've taken away from the travels that you've had because of basketball? And he said actually one of them was to make sure you get your check, just because if a sponsor pulls out or something, you could be waiting around to try to get paid later. So what's the biggest life lesson that you've taken away from your travels, meeting different people, different cultures and everything? What did you take away on the life side of things?
I mean, that is a good lesson that Devin said, but fortunately, I was lucky enough to go to stable teams. I didn't have to worry about chasing down my check every week, but I know exactly what he means. No, my life lesson would be really, it opened your eyes. I would advise everyone to get a chance to, especially young kids, to get a chance to travel and get outside of the United States, go anywhere, just because it's going to open your eyes just about how other people are living. Because I see it before I left, and before I left the country, I was so closed-minded. Just as a person, thought everything was how I did it or how we did it was the correct way. And, you know, it was just really closed-minded. So I think that like it really opened my mind, and I've traveled all over the world now and been to so many different countries and met so many different people. And it really just broadens your mind to how other people are living. Mm-hmm. And you give you a better appreciation toward how you're living and how well you have it here, as opposed to them. And also gives you, you know, I was just happier because I would see, like in Argentina, for example, I would see the people and they'd be so poor and they would be so happy. And I'm like, man, why are these people so poor and they're so happy? And like, I know people at home that have like three cars and they're miserable. So I used to kind of think like, you know, have to change your mentality when you see stuff like that, you know? Mm-hmm. And also tell me to be more, you know, when you travel in Europe, other countries, they're much more family oriented. It's all about the society and everything. So it's just the tidbits of had the differences and everything, but I also try to take back the best and implement it in my life, but it changed me a lot. And also about my diet too, the food is bad here. You know, I have a better diet. I have a better diet traveling in Europe and, you know, learning some of their, you know, their practices and everything. So I just learned a lot of different things that, traveling, learning different customs, learning the people. And I made sure I learned the people. I have friends from all over the world. So that's the thing that I would take away, that, and that's the thing like that money can't buy, would be my experience. Mm-hmm. The experience of traveling all the world. I've never imagined I would be like in Russia and Siberia, some of these places, you know? So the additional experiences that money can buy that I would take away that are like will last a lifetime for me, with me.
Quickfire, favorite city?
Favorite city. Oh my goodness. That's a great question. Oh man, you put me on a blast right there. I've been all over the world. I've been all over the world. My favorite city, I'll have to break it down. My favorite city in America would be Las Vegas. My favorite city outside of America would have to be, I'm going to say Barcelona.
Interesting. All right. I still haven't been to Europe yet. I've been around a bunch of other places, but not to Europe. So maybe I'll put Barcelona on the list. Cape Town's my favorite that I've been to, and then New Orleans in America. But last quick fire for you, favorite food dish you hadn't tried that you tried outside and now has become kind of a staple?
You know what? I'm a real picky eater. I'm a real picky eater with my food. And I never grew out of that. I'm still like a kid eating, you know, with my food. But I'm going to say that in Argentina, they have some, they eat a lot of asado, a lot of beef and a lot of meat. And I'm not really a big beef eater, but the way they make it, it's just so good. You know, and a good cut of steak here will cost you, you know, as soon as you go, they're going to talk about, we have the best beef in the world. That's what they're going to tell you. And it's true. But like, there's a good slab of beef here is going to cost you, guys went to the restaurant, it's like $75. But there it's like, you know, it'd be, you know, $10 and stuff. But yes, I start eating a lot more beef, and then they have some, and they don't put anything on it. Just beef, it's just delicious. So I would say eating asado. I would say eating asado over in Argentina.
Gotcha. Thank you so much for the time. I've got a couple more, just because, you know, we talked a little bit about the Mobleys. After your Elite Eight run in 2001, you actually declared for the NBA draft before eventually withdrawing and returning to USC. Obviously, the process is different now. The NCAA rules have changed. But what did you learn from that process yourself?
That is a crazy process. I actually went to Chicago. Now they don't even play in Chicago. I played well You know, I probably could have went to the – at that time, it wasn't like a really a hurry for players to go to the NBA. Mm-hmm. So now it's just like a rush to skip college and go to the NBA. But that time it was – you know, it wasn't a rush. You know, Shane Batty was a senior. You know, a senior, like you could be a senior and still – it was fun. You know, so I wasn't in a rush. So I tried it out. I don't have any regrets coming back to school because that was my decision. You know, I made all my own decisions, but I just learned, I love the process going through it and everything, seeing like the inside of the NBA, seeing how it works and seeing some of the backdoor deals and everything that, you know, that go on and stuff that, you know, that's what I'll take from that process that, you know, it's a lot of backdoor deals going on that, you know, the public is not aware about that. I was aware about that once I started to be in it, you know, so. But it was an amazing process and everything. I'm not sure about now how they do it. But
yeah, it's definitely different, you know, now. And, you know, obviously everyone knows Evan Mobley's going. He's going to be a top three draft pick. Where he ends up may depend on who's drafting at that point, maybe even the top overall pick. But assistant coach Eric Mobley, you know, in a recent report, you know, he said that Isaiah, along with Evan, will be entering the NBA draft, and they're going to see where it goes, kind of is what he said. Not saying he's necessarily leaving, but that he'd be entering to go through the process, and obviously they can come back. There's some, you know, they're allowed to. If they don't get drafted, you're allowed to return to college. So there's a bunch of different things from, you know, when you actually went through the process. But from your experience, what would you say is the most important thing that Isaiah would need to learn in this process before making his ultimate decision, whether to stick his name in the NBA draft and keep it there or to return to school?
I think, honestly, he's making the right decision. I think that he's on this stage that he's proven that he is an NBA player, and that he reminds me of a Boris Diaw type player. And the way the NBA plays now is they can definitely use a player with his skill set. He's only going to get better. He's what, 6'9", he's a great body, he's athletic, you know, he can shoot, dribble. I mean, tell me other players who can do that in the NBA. So I don't see like how it's different if he had to show more to the NBA that he got to prove that he could do something better. No, he's proven himself enough as far as my eyes. It doesn't matter where you get drafted. What I learned going through the process was it didn't matter where I got drafted at, you know, because you still got to perform. And as long as it's first round, you know, second round, you have to make the team, but you still got to perform first round. It's like, if you look at the draft class, there's only maybe like two guys from the first round of my draft class who even made it, you know? So it's not, nothing's guaranteed. Nothing is first round, just first pick bus, second pick bus all the time. So, but for me, the biggest thing, even for Evan, is that going to the right situation, you want to go to the right team, even if you got to fall in the draft, it doesn't matter. You know, you want to go to the right team, the right organization, because some of these organizations are just terrible. And you can see by the players they get, you know, like they ruin good players, and everyone's looking at, oh, this player's terrible, but he's a 20-year-old kid in this terrible organization that's been through five different coaches, and what do you want him to do? You know, so you can see it with a lot of these kids in a lot of these bad situations. So I just pray that he goes to the right team, the right organization that'll build around him, even if he, and especially for Isaiah, if you got to slip, but you want to slip to the Spurs, you know, you want to slip to them. You don't want to slip to Sacramento, you know what I'm saying? Like, no disrespect to any team, or but you know what I'm saying. These ruin careers. It's, you know, we've seen it done in every sport, football, basketball. You go to certain organizations, they're going to ruin your career. So you want to go to the right club where they're going to build around you, and they're going to put you in the right position to be successful and have a good future. If not, you're going to be complaining, you know, look at the kid, Kevin Porter. Look what happened to Kevin Porter. You don't want to go to – I'm from Cleveland. It's not a good organization. LeBron left. You don't want to go there. You know, he gets out of there now. Look at him. He's like a star in Houston because he's in the right place where they put around him. They know how to treat him. They know how to talk to him. They're good with young kids. They're going to take care of you. You know, certain places they're going to leave you, like throw you to the wolves. You're an 18-year-old kid. You got millions of dollars all of a sudden. You know, and they throw you to the wolves. You know, the Mobley brothers are great. They have their father with them, guiding them through the whole process. They are lucky, you know, but the other kids aren't so lucky, you know. So they're going to be in a great situation. Their dad's going to be there to pick the agent out to make sure they're not going to be abused with a financial advisor, because there's a lot of predators out there. Mm-hmm. You got all these kids all of a sudden don't know anything about finances. And then all of a sudden he's going to get $10 million, $20 million, $50 million. Like, what's he going to do with that money? He has to learn what to do with that money, who to trust, and also, you know, who not to trust in his own inner circle.
Yep.
So there's a lot of things, but with the dad there, you know, they have a strong backbone. I mean, the kids are on a solid foundation. So, but for both Mobley brothers now, I mean, the sky's the limit. We're going to be watching them, you know, on TNT next year and cheering for them. That's how it's going to be.
I think that they're definitely on the way. Isaiah showing out these first two games of the NCAA tournament, definitely improving the stock and showing what he's capable of. So probably catching some eyes there. Now, Evan Mobley named Pac-12 Player of the Year, Pac-12 Defensive Player of the Year, Pac-12 Freshman of the Year. First one in the Pac-12 earned those honors, only the second one in a major conference, along with Anthony Davis. He was the first USC Player of the Year since Sam Clancy. That would be you. Is Evan Mobley helping put USC back on the map? And the last question, what is the key for this team to continue their push forward this season in the March Madness tournament?
Well, Evan Mobley is definitely putting USC back on the map. I've been loving what Coach Enfield. He's been doing great with the program and he's the best winning, you know, in the last 5 years, you know, best winning percentage ever. He's been having a program going up and up every year. But finally, we're doing it in the tournament. And he's also been getting high draft pick. And also big guys. We're talking about big guys the NBA's big guys are dead and stuff. But we're pushing out big guy lottery picks after another one. So I got to give him props on developing the young bigs and everything and getting them ready for the next level. But I just think that Evan, he's definitely putting USC right back on the national stage. You know, I hope that we can stay there. I hope we get a strong recruiting class to stay there. But I don't think that we're done. And I think, to answer your last question, for us to continue, it has to all fall back on the defense. That is our backbone. That's what we've been doing all year. If we continue to be the best defensive team like we were all year, if we be the best defensive team in the tournament, we will win the tournament. The best defensive team will win the tournament. And whoever wins the rebounding. If you win the rebounding and you play the best defense, you're going to win the tournament. That's how it works. That's how basketball works. The best teams who play defense and rebound win it all. So if we continue to do that, we have a shot amongst anybody. I don't care the name on the front, Gonzaga, whoever, everybody's out. You know, Duke, all the big names that I know are all out of the tournament. So it's like it's a free-for-all, you know. So we're playing for the name on the back of the jersey. We got the best players in the country, the Mobley brothers. We got the best. We're playing the best basketball right now that anybody is playing, you know, in the tournament. I mean, we're only trending up. So I think it's just going to continue. But we have to lay our hat on our defense. And we can't come out next game and get pretty. We can't come out and be like, okay, we cool now. Let's go shoot 25 threes. No. We got to start inside out. Ball with the Mobley brothers. Get them going. They're going to find you. Pass. Get your wide open shots. Get the ball moving. Play unselfishly. And I got to give a shout out to the guards, Taj Eady, Drew Peterson, Isaiah White. I got to give a shout out to them. They've been holding it down all year. They've been holding it down. I know that maybe they don't get enough publicity that they should, but they've been holding it down all year for the team, especially Taj Eady making big shots after big shots. You know, I just think that, man, we're going to be a tough out. And that people know that. I think people are going to get scared and start to, you know, I think they're going to start having to take notice of USC, man. So I'm looking for defense to win us this next game. I'm looking for the Mobleys to have a big game, and I'm looking for USC to advance.
Well, Sam, we'll see what happens this weekend on Sunday when USC plays Oregon in the Sweet 16, their first appearance since 2007, trying to make it to the first Elite Eight appearance for USC since Sam Clancy and the guys took the Trojans in 2001. Sam, thanks so much for the time. Really appreciate you jumping on and talking for so long with us about your career, about that special run in 2001, and about this year's team as well.
No problem. Thanks for having me, guys. Fight on.
Well, that's going to wrap it up for this edition of the Heard It on the Sidelines podcast, part of the Peristyle podcast family. I'm your host, Shotgun Spratling, saying thank you again to Sam Clancy, the All-American, the Pac-10 Player of the Year. Just a terrific player, terrific interview there. Thank him for joining us, and thanks to all you for listening. We'll hope you'll be back to join us for the next episode of the Heard It on the Sidelines podcast.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount+. Paramount+, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.